Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by BlackRock Health, providing patients with world-class clinical care and comfort, enabling swifter recoveries.
Now, yesterday saw the most important sunrise of the year as thousands of people across this country took part in the Darkness into Light Walk for Pieta House to give hope to people impacted by suicide and self-harm. Well, it's a little over 3 years now since a life-changing experience made yesterday's walk take on a whole new meaning for my next guest this morning. Sandy Kelly, country music star and well-known entertainer and singer. Good morning to you, Sandy.
Good morning, Miriam. It's my first time to speak to you, actually.
Yeah, and it's a privilege for me, Sandy. Thanks so much.
Oh, not at all. Thank you so much for inviting me on the show.
And I know you're in our Sligo studio this morning.
I am. I'm about 10 minutes from my house.
Fantastic. Now, listen, I know you're not long back from a great tour in Scotland. Did it go well?
It went really well. I don't know if you visit Scotland often, but it was lovely. I love going to Scotland. And the shows were great and the audiences were very lively, which is what you need for country music. So it was great.
Yeah, great place there. Now, I know, Sandy, you were taking part in Darkness into Light, I suppose in a private capacity with some family. And I gather it was the first time you felt able to do that since the death of your sister, Barbara.
Yes, I suppose some people can, you know, join walks for hope and all that sort of thing. But just in our family, we weren't quite ready. It was still quite raw. My sister passed away in 2018. October 2018. So it was quite a while before we could get back to doing anything that we would deem normal, you know, in the aftermath of something like that.
Will you tell me a little about your sister, Barbara? I think she was a few years younger than you. Tell me about the pair of you.
Yes, Barbara was 8 years younger than me. And I suppose in a way she was the baby of our family. And our mother became very ill when Barbara was only 8 years old. So I took over a mother figure, if you like, to Barbara. And then when she became 15 years old, she left school and she joined my band. Uninvited, I might say. I didn't really want her in the band. I didn't think she was that great of a singer at the time. But I'll tell you, she improved and very quick. And she was a very bubbly person. Always the life and soul of the party. You know, she'd light up any room she was in, compassionate, beautiful looking, all the qualities that you'd want in anybody. Very giving and caring, a wonderful singer, wonderful entertainer. So, you know, there wasn't a lot negative in that side of her life.
And I suppose to go back to your mum, to try and get, I was thinking about this morning, Sandy, that your mum, like, she basically had a brain hemorrhage, but I think it was very difficult for you all, wasn't it? And especially maybe for your younger sister, Barbara.
I suppose, you know, when somebody has a mental health issue, you know, you try to think why or what happened. And I suppose since Barbara's death, I've had more time to think about that. So going back to my mother, when she was only 38 years old, she had a brain hemorrhage. And I was 16 and Barbara was only 8. And my mum went into hospital, one person, much like Barbara, bubbly and funny and beautiful. And she came out of hospital 6 months later, a totally different person. I mean, she had no sense of reality, no sense of, she'd gone from spoiling Barbara and her being the golden child to virtually ignoring her, really, you know. So that must have, I think that must have had a terrible effect on Barbara growing up.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, because when you're, especially when you're 8, I mean, it would have been really difficult on you too, Sandy, to be honest. But
I think, you know, Miriam, I think I just, you know, I was fairly old-fashioned anyway. So I think I just took on the role straight away of running the house and taking care of Barbara. And then, of course, excuse me, when my mum came home from hospital, I had to be her carer as well. So I just didn't have time to think about how difficult it was. I just kind of got on with it.
But, of course, that would never happen today. I mean, like, there were no carers or really home help available. Sure, there wasn't. So at 16 years of age, you were your mother's carer and your little sister's carer.
And I was singing at night.
Wow.
I was also bringing in the few bob as well. My dad had a little garage in Ballintore where we lived, and he would take care of mum at night, and I would go off with the Fairway show band and I'd be playing in a marquee or something, you know. So it was we juggled it, if you like. But as you said, there was no social workers or carers or anything like that, you know. So we pretty much were left on our own.
Now, were you and Barbara close? I mean, obviously, it would have been a different relationship when she was so young. But when you got older and you were singing together in your band, the Duskies, were you close?
We, you know, like any sisters, we were very, very close and inseparable in many ways. But going alongside with that, you know, we'd have our falling outs as well. Mm. And, you know, we were two very different people, really. Although we looked very similar and worked very well on stage. In our private lives, Barbara loved to be untidy, and I'm a bit of a neat freak. So that would, in dressing rooms along the way, that would cause a bit of a row now and again. And in the house, Miriam.
You say, don't you, Sandy, that she was one of the funniest people you'd meet.
She was hilarious. And in fact, when we did our summer shows or anything like that, and we did, when I toured for years with the Patsy Cline musical, Barbara did all the comedy stuff and all the funny stuff. And people just loved her. There were times when, you know how you have your loyal followers, that same people come back to see you time after time. Well, there was times when Barbara would just walk on the stage and she'd get a standing ovation because the audience knew it would annoy me. So this became a sort of a routine, you know, on part of the show where Barbara would just have to turn up and people would applaud and stand up. And she was just funny, very, very funny. Everybody loved her.
And despite, of course, everyone loving her, being jolly and happy, she was dealing, obviously, with inner turmoil. I mean, when did you notice her struggles with depression first begin, do you think?
Well, first of all, she never, ever shared that with anybody. She never spoke about it to me. I mean, it was very obvious to me from a young age that Barbara had difficulties, but it would present itself in, you know, a tantrum or a bad humour or, you know, a row about something. And you kind of become used to that. And I always put it down to the fact that she'd had a hard life and, you know, look, if she wants to throw a tantrum about something, it's Barbara and that's the way she is. And I didn't read much more than that into it until later in life. And, you know, when Barbara got married and she had her daughter, and it became more apparent then that the pressure of life was becoming too much for her. But you could not broach that subject with Barbara because that would be a huge row. So you couldn't sit down and say, you know, Barbara, can I help, or do you need help? Or there was none of that. Mm. That was never mentioned.
And did she ever, Sandy, seek professional help?
Well, she had a path warned to the doctor, to the GP. But as far as I'm aware, or her daughter, Sandy, she never had any psychiatric help. No. And that's, you know, I suppose why I'm talking to you today. Mm. If I had it to do over again, I would do it differently. I would have made sure she got help. I spoke to my own GP about it not long before Barbara passed away, about how I might approach getting her help without causing a war. So I had begun that thought process, thinking, of course, that I had a lot of time to do it. As it turned out, I didn't have that much time at all.
So going back to the day in 2018, I appreciate it's painful, but tell me a little bit about what happened. Because both yourself and Barbara's daughter, Sandy, who I know you're incredibly close to,
yes,
you both had experienced a kind of a sense of foreboding that night, hadn't you?
We did. Going back to the, you know, the disagreements and falling out, you know, it would always come from Barbara's side because she'd be feeling bad or having a bad time. And she would then lash out at the people that were closest to her, as people do, you know. Mm. And she hadn't spoken to me for quite some time, which made what happened all the harder for me. And so I hadn't been speaking to her. It was actually her birthday, and on the 8th of October. And so I actually thought about her all day, and I felt bad that we weren't speaking. But I came down on the side that she had requested time away from me, which I understand, I'm not the easiest person to be around sometimes. So she had requested that I stayed out of her life for a time. And I was respecting that wish. But as the night grew on and as the night got later, I sat in my chair in the sitting room. Sandy had gone back that day to UCD. She was in UCD at the time. And as the night went on, I felt very uncomfortable. Miriam, it's very, I can't explain the feeling exactly because I've never had a feeling like it. But my tummy was in a knot, you know, that sort of a anxious feeling. And I sat up until about 5 or 6 that morning. But never, ever did the thought come into my head that there was something wrong with Barbara. That just didn't occur to me at all. Then Sandy then shared with me the next morning. She rang me because she wasn't able to contact her mother, which was very unusual. And Sandy rang me and alerted me to the fact that she couldn't contact her mum. I then picked up the phone to ring my sister's house and I couldn't contact her either. And then several hours after that, a member of the family went over to the house and discovered that she wasn't there and her car wasn't there. And she had two dogs and a cat and they were kind of left unattended in the house, which was very unusual. Her handbag was there and her phone, which was unusual. So then the guards were contacted. And at the same time the guards were contacted, they had already been alerted that Barbara had been found. She wasn't identified at that time.
How?
And Sandy was, I had asked Sandy to make her way home, still sure that Barbara would be found okay, but that she might need, you know, Sandy at home to comfort her, you know.
And when you realised that Barbara had taken her own life, how did you process that? I mean, how do you cope when you
don't? You don't. I just hysteria. I mean, my reaction was, I just went hysterical. Mad, insane, crazy. And then, of course, after 5 minutes of wailing like a banshee, I was making my way to my sister's house because you don't know what you're doing, really. And then I got a phone call from my son, Willie, to say that my sister was in Sligo General. So then still in my head, I was going to visit her. Do you know what I mean? So obviously shock turns to insanity, you know. So I went to Sligo General and inquired where she was. And I was told where she was and I couldn't process that, you know, that any of this was happening. So I didn't go to see her. I just went home and my son and I have a daughter with special needs, Barbara. And the first thing I did before I heard the awful news, I brought Barbara back to respite because I knew that I couldn't handle everything. Excuse me. And so I just went home and waited for Sandy to come home on the train. And we went in to greet her and tell her, but she said she knew because going back to your question, she'd had the same uncomfortable night as I had and the same feeling that something awful was wrong. But in her case, she was relating it to her mum.
And they were incredibly close, weren't they, Sandy? Like Barbara, your sister, adored her daughter, Sandy.
Adored. She was the best mother in the world. She just adored Sandy. And, you know, she loved animals. She was always, that was one of the things that didn't always go down well with me. The animals were everywhere, you know, the beds, the couches, everywhere. And I'd say, Barbara, can you not get that cat off the worktop or can you not take that dog out of the bed? Now guess who's in my bed and in my house? Barbara's dogs and her cat now live in my house. So, you know, and now it doesn't seem like such a big deal. So, you know, when something like that happens and somebody that you love so dearly decides to take their own life, it's a terrible thing to try to process. There's terrible pain afterwards, and that's an ongoing thing that visits you on a daily basis. I can't comprehend what it's like for young Sandy. But going along with that is anger, you know. I felt anger against my sister as well for leaving.
And I know one of the reasons Sandy, you do want to speak about this morning, because you say, like many a family in Ireland, you never thought for a second that suicide would come to your family's door.
Never, never. You hear about it and you don't hear enough about it, and people don't talk enough about it. But no, and I never thought it would come to our door, and in such a brutal fashion. And after this happened, so many people reached out to me that I'd known for years, and I didn't know that we had this tragedy in common. This is happening an awful lot more than we're even aware of. And if I had it to do again, I would have reached out to my sister, even if she was going to get annoyed, even if she was going to tell me to leave the house, or even if she wouldn't open the door or slam it or whatever. I would have endured the backlash of whatever would come, and I would have reached out. And the reason that I'm probably a little bit angry with my sister is that she couldn't have reached out, you know, that she just couldn't reach out. So if there's anybody listening today that's in my sister's situation, please reach out.
Yeah, and lots of our listeners, one says to you, Sandy, I have a family member whom I have tried to help. It's not easy, and not everyone responds to help. Sandy should not feel guilty. We all do our best. And another says, Sandy, hi Miriam, sad listening to Sandy, but good on her for talking about her sister. We are going through a loss by suicide, and it's so comforting listening to her. That's from Noreen in Galway, and she says, may Barbara be at peace. Has Barbara's death changed you, Sandy?
Thank you, first of all, Miriam, to those lovely people for ringing in. It has changed me, yes. Yeah. I suppose I realise that you don't always have time, you know, not to put things off. I live every day as much as I can, and more than I ever did for my family. I have a very small family. Very small group of people whom are wonderful and whom I love. I've spent more time, I've travelled, as you know, with my career for years, and sometimes not spending enough time at home. I don't do that anymore. I think time with your family is the most important thing. I'm blessed with a grandson who's 8 years old, Frank Johan, and he's been my shining light, as has Sandy and my daughter Barbara and my son William for the last... since 2018. So it has changed me. I've become a more serious person, I think. And I know that life can be taken away at any given second.
And I know, as we end, Sandy, you want people, anyone who's listening, if you're worried about a loved one's mental health, to reach out to them, to not be afraid, because however hard it might be to make that approach, you really believe it's better to do so now before time runs out.
It's better to endure the whatever's going to happen. And even if you can't reach out directly to the person, which was the case in my case, I mean, I never stopped loving my sister. I was never angry at my sister. I came down on the side of respecting her wishes, because, you know, she was probably fed up listening to me, so she wanted time away. Fine, that, you know. But I didn't realise she was in the mental state that she was, to the extent that she was. But if I had been in closer contact with her, I would have, and perhaps I would have done whatever it was going to take to save her life. Because there is so much, I've come to realise since this happened, there is so much help out there for people, so much help. If people can only get over the hump and reach out and ask for it.
And on that, Sandy, you're so good. And I'm just going to say before we close, if anyone listening is feeling like they really need to speak to someone, the Samaritans, it's a free phone on 116 123 and it's a 24-hour line, Sandy. Or they can free phone Pieta House on their 24-hour line, which is 1-800-247-247. Or you can text the word help to 51444. Anyway, Sandy Kelly, thank
and
you so much,
Miriam,
for telling me.
Can I just mention as well, GIVA GAA Club Northwest Stop Suicide Prevention are having a walk for hope Sunday the 14th of May at 4:30, starting at GIVA Resource Centre.
Oh, okay, Sandy, thank you so much for telling
me. Not at
me.
All. Thank you, Miriam, for calling and inviting me to be on the show, and to Cora for talking to me previously.
And we look forward to chatting to you again. Mind yourself, Sandy.
You
we'll
too.
Take a
Thank
break.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1.